Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. is in Montana, where it's already midnight. It's going to be a long day for him tomorrow and has been a long day for him today. So we're going to get right down to business. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Doctor, I've heard myths about you and Roswell. I've seen movies and I've read books, but I've never talked to you about it. I've never heard it from you. And so I guess I would like to find, how old were you when all this occurred?
Well, I was almost 12 years old. This was in July of 1947. I was 11 then. I was 12 in August. So pretty close to being 12.
So about 12 years old.
Yeah.
I take it that, well, I shouldn't take it. What was the first indication that you had, that something had occurred?
When my dad woke me up early in the morning to show us some debris that he brought in from the field out of Roswell. He'd left earlier that day, or maybe the day before, I don't really recall now, but when he came in, he came by the house, he woke my mother and myself up to look at some metal fragments and debris that he and another fellow found out there northwest of Roswell.
Can you remember what he actually said he had found?
Well, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he said that this was part of a flying saucer or something to that effect. At that time, I really wasn't quite sure what a flying saucer was, but I certainly later found out what the connotation was.
Well, at 12 years old, the I guess the phrase flying saucer would at least get your attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you went, obviously, bounded out of bed, I'm sure. Were you in bed at that point?
Oh, yes. It must have been 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Certainly very late. I'd been asleep for several hours.
Oh, so no doubt you bounded out of bed and went to take a look at what was downstairs. What had he done?
He wanted me to help him unload some boxes of this material from the car. We had a 1942 Buick convertible.
So there were boxes of it?
Yes, uh-huh. And so I went outside, helped him unload a couple boxes of debris, and what we did, we just dumped it on the kitchen floor. And he said, I want you to look at this, something very unusual. Look for some electronic components, like vacuum tubes or resistors, condensers, wires. There wasn't anything like that. And I guess the next step was, well, we wanted to see if we could put some of this together. There's a lot of metal debris in the... See if we could put it together like a jigsaw puzzle and make some sort of a outline out of it.
Right. But, of course, you only had pieces of a far greater puzzle, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was far too much of it to do anything like that with. And certainly there wasn't anything that could be construed as electronic, no electrical wires or the other components, no.
How would you describe it as just sort of... we've heard many things: beams with what appear to be hieroglyphics on them, or portions of beams. Or can you recall the nature of what was there?
Well, as I remember, there was about three types of this debris. There was a lot of metal foil, sort of like aluminum foil that you would see in the kitchen today. Was kind of dull, not really very reflective. It was very light, and there was some black plastic and debris I thought was something like bakelite. And then there were the I-beams, or the beams, as I recall, that had this writing or the symbols written across the inner surface of it. And that was the most intriguing part of this whole thing. These were very small beams, maybe a quarter of an inch in diameter, or at least cross-sectional area. And when you held it up to the light, there was some purple-type writing or symbols on the inside surface. And I guess the longest beam that I could see was about 12 to 18 inches long.
On the ends, could you tell whether they had been broken off, burned off? Was the debris obviously fire damage or crash damaged?
I really don't recall whether the ends were cleanly cut or whether they were fractured. Didn't make an impression on me. The biggest impression was the writing on it.
Okay. You mentioned some dark material.
Yeah, there was pieces of broken plastic, like a Bakelite or...
Bakelite, yes.
Yeah, things of this nature.
Did you happen to look at the side of that and notice whether it was finely layered material or it was solid?
The plastic?
Yes, sir.
No, you know, if you wanted, compare it to anything, it looked like a broken phonograph record. You know, pieces of, the old broken records.
Uh-huh.
It didn't seem to be layered or anything like that.
Okay. Your dad then must have sort of told you the story about what he found. Did he only tell you about debris, or was there ever mention of more, what would be considered to be a craft or anything more?
No, yeah. The only thing he mentioned was the debris. He said he had picked a portion of this material up with another gentleman out there, and actually it was a friend of our family. I think his name was Cavett at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were heading into the air base with the material, and since our house was on the way to the air base, he swung by the house to show it to my mother and myself, as that he considered it to be so unusual.
Did
he wanted us to look at it.
Right. Did he indicate there was a lot more debris out there and he had only part of it, or was that it?
Yeah, no, my feeling was that this was only a small part of what was out there.
Okay. Did you, when your father then, how long, once he left, did he gather up all the material? Did he leave some with you? I seem to recall in the movie that some had been left with you.
Well, that was just part of the movie. No, he gathered it all up, and we put it back in the boxes and back of the 42 Buick, and then he left for the air base, and I went back to bed, and that was the end of that.
And that was the end of that?
Yeah, until a day or two later when he came back home.
So he was gone that long?
Yes. And my understanding now is that he helped, you know, consign, or he flew the stuff to the Fort Worth Air Base, and what was in what was supposed to be Carswell Air Force Base. And he left it there and came back the next day. And I do remember him coming in and saying, talk to my mother and myself about this, and as something that we are not to discuss again. It's just something that didn't happen, just treat it as a non-event. And that's exactly what we did.
Can you remember his demeanor at that time? In other words, when he talked to you and said, look, it was a non-event, this never happened, it's got to be a secret or whatever, what was his demeanor like, or do you even recall that?
I don't recall that, but I would think it would be pretty serious. You know, he wanted to make a point that we're not to discuss this issue again.
And by then it was hitting the headlines all over the place. I mean, it was the Roswell radio station, the one I'm on right now, as a matter of fact, and the newspaper and then papers all over the country at that point were making a great big deal out of it. Did that impact you?
Well, we just heard about that later, that there was big publicity splash about that. As a matter of fact, sometime after this happened, I guess my dad had a friend in China. I'm not sure where, Peking, who sent him a clipping out of the newspaper there. So it actually had...
So it made it all the way over there, yeah.
1947.
Over the years, how many times, I bet it's been a million, have you sat down and tried to remember the details of all this again and again and again?
Yeah, I've tried many, many times, and, you know, you can just get so much water out of a...
That's right.
...out of a turnip, and, you know, because I guess one of the problems is I saw this for a total of maybe 15 or 20 minutes, total, you know, tops, about 50 years ago, and the only reason I remember any of it at all is because it was such an unusual event. You know, the material itself had a very unusual characteristic, and that's the only reason I remember this happening at all.
All right. In the movie... and that's my only reference other than books, they talked about the foil, foil material, and
mm-hmm.
it almost looked magical, as though you would crumple it and it would just suddenly return to shape.
Yeah, I heard other people describe that physical attribute. I did not witness that myself. I didn't try to fold it up or bend it or tear it or do anything like that. So I just looked at it and carefully put it back down. I didn't try to do anything with it.
Do you think that what you saw could have been a balloon?
No. Not a balloon, no.
Not a balloon.
One thing, too, that really strikes home with that is that I saw pictures of my dad in General Ramey's office at Fort Worth with some debris that they said came from the Roswell crash site.
Yeah, that was a famous shot they made him take, right?
Yeah, that we were, that supposedly that was the same stuff that was on our kitchen floor in Roswell.
Yes, sir.
Not.
Not,
Not.
Okay, so that's a for sure thing. That's easy to remember.
That's the thing that really brings it home, that boy, they're trying to do something here.
Okay, well, you know, I think about a year ago, it was a year ago, the Air Force finally came out and said, well, we did lie. It wasn't a balloon. It was a balloon, but a different kind of balloon, a very special balloon to try and detect Soviet nuclear testing. And can you imagine that being a possibility?
Well, you know, a balloon is a balloon is a balloon. You know, there's not that much difference between what the Mogul device would have been or what the weather balloon would have been or, you know, whatever they want to say about it. There would be no confusion there.
Okay. In the years that passed until your father died, did you have conversations with him about this?
We had off and on talks about this. I knew that he'd gone to Roswell a few times to be interviewed, and people begrudgingly, he didn't really seek any attention to this thing, but people came to him. And I remember that one of the last times I talked to him on the telephone about this, you know, he'd just come back from Roswell and was out at the crash site, or supposedly out at the crash site, and I asked him, well, jokingly, was there any of that debris out there? And he said, oh, no, no, they vacuumed all that up. So obviously there was no scrap of it left. And I did try to confirm that we saw the same thing, remember the same thing, and I said, what was the color of the writing on the beam? And he said, oh, it was a violet-purple, and that's exactly what I recall, too. So we recall the same type of physical characteristics.
Whatever it was not English.
No, no. You know, when I first saw it, I thought, you know, as a little kid, you know, I thought, well, hey, this is a look like hieroglyphics. And then, but when you look at it, no, it wasn't hieroglyphics either. It was, well, like geometric symbols of some kind. And I know the Air Force is trying to say, well, this was a flower pattern on some scotch tape on some balsa wood that was used to fix tinfoil to the balsa wood. Well, no, it wasn't scotch tape with flowers on it. I would know that. And I knew what balsa wood was because I built stick models all the time. And
this was metal?
Not balsa wood.
This was metal?
This was metal, yes.
Do you recall, you must have hefted one or picked one up in your hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was it heavy as in iron? Or?
No, it was very light. You know, I don't recall any weight to it or mass to it at all. Just being like this, like feather, you know. I don't remember something that wasn't there, though. I mean, but in my recollection, it was a very light light structure.
Did your father, in later conversations, ever sit down and tell you the whole story, or did he hold this essentially to the end?
No, he never told me the whole story. The only story I know that came from him is through interviews that he gave to other people years after this event, but we never sat down and discussed at length what this was, or at least what he, you know, if the whole story is. We always considered it, though, to be something very unusual, probably extraterrestrial, though. There's no question about that.
There have been many reports, and, of course, the movie did it up, about the extraterrestrial bodies that were captured, even some talking about one alive, that sort of thing. No mention of that from your father?
Not at all. Because I think, you know, if they were there, you know, that was another loop of information, and I guess, you know, with compartmentalization, if you didn't have the need to know about other things, you were not in the loop to know about this other thing. So the event, I guess, was segmented, and those who had privy to one part did not have privy to another part of the knowledge or the event.
If we go back to when it first occurred, when your dad brought all the boxes home and said it came from a flying saucer or something to that effect.
Right, yeah.
What were your father's qualifications? In other words, would he have known what he was saying?
Well, you know, he was a base intelligence officer, so I assume he would know what he was talking about. He was in on aircraft accident investigations and certainly flew enough during the war to know what radar targets and things like that would have been. And as a matter of fact, he went to radar school to learn about different types of radar targets and kites and so forth. So he knew, you know, he had training to delineate the difference between what we saw and what the Air Force says we saw.
So that was a man who would have known exactly what he was seeing.
Yes, exactly.
Or at least for certain what he wasn't seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
What about your mom? How did she take all this? And did you notice after your dad came back that there was any difference in your mom's take on everything? Did she suddenly quiet down about it?
Well, you know, we just didn't discuss it to my memory. You know, this is going back a long time ago now, and I don't really recall that it really had any big impact on our lives at that point because we just forgot about it. You know, I said, well, this is what happens. Just forget it.
Over the next few days, well, let's see, this occurred in July, so you weren't in school then, were you?
That's correct.
Had the story ballooned, and was it big by the time you did get back to school that year?
No, I think it had been pretty well buried by that time.
Buried by that time. When did the interest or the rush of interest come back and people began trying to interview your father in the press, you know, trying to get as much as they could from your father?
Well, you know, not for years, no. As a matter of fact, the first interview I know that my dad officially gave to was Stan Friedman, and that was in 1978, I believe.
Stan is a good friend. He's
oh, yeah.
A very, very nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice guy. Of course, nobody thought to take photographs or anything like that at 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
No. No such thing as a Polaroid camera then, or even a camera that we had in the house.
Yes. Yes.
I just wish, well, I tell you what, had we kept a piece of it for souvenirs, we would not have it now.
You don't think so?
No.
Did they come back at any point? Did officers or people, do you recall anybody coming to your house and interviewing your father or your mother or even yourself?
No, nothing like that happened.
Then why do you think, had you held squirreled a piece away somewhere?
Oh, I would have let somebody know that I had a piece of it.
Like every kid in the world would.
Yeah, that's right, and I don't think I'd have it now.
Uh-huh. There have been stories that there were large crews that went out to, in quotes, vacuum up the area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that? Did your dad say that? He did say they vacuumed the area.
Yeah, those were his words, and that was when I was talking to him. I know it was the day that conversation was in 1980. Yeah, November, December 1980.
Did he ever tell you how many had been involved in that cleanup?
No, I'm not sure he knew.
You know, the movie showed, looked like 100 GIs out there crawling across the... Doctor, you said your dad woke you up about 1 or 2 in the morning or something like that.
Yes, sir.
When had the crash occurred? Do you know how much earlier than that?
You know, I have no knowledge of when it actually occurred.
Okay. Do you recall people talking about having seen anything in the days or months or even years that followed that crashed?
Not offhand. You know, of course, there's always the scattered flying saucer report, a UFO. There's always those. But I don't recall anything specifically as pertained to the Roswell event in of itself.
All right, sir. Do you remember the movie, the recent movie about Roswell?
Yes,
When you sat down and watched that, was it a big laugh? Some of it accurate, a little bit of it with a lot of dramatic license, or how would you characterize it?
Well, no, I think it was a job well done. I think the events as depicted in 1947 were pretty accurate, you know, with the exception of them showing me keeping a piece that my dad had to go back and recoup. That didn't happen. But I think, by and large, it was pretty accurate. It was from 1947.
Were you all consulted about the movie?
Oh, you know, I guess they had. I talked with Paul Davids, some of those people with this, and they, you know, kind of shot the breeze about this. Yeah.
Sure. If your father had kept any debris, a piece to something, a little souvenir, do you think you would have found out about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would not have kept that a secret. No, we were pretty close.
Were there pieces... Now I'm imagining there were quite a few GIs out there cleaning all this up. And they had to have manpower. Somebody had to do it. So were there pieces that you saw that would have been small enough that were on your kitchen floor that somebody could have slipped them into a pocket?
Oh, certainly. As a matter of fact, there was a smudge of it that we dumped on the kitchen floor that we later jokingly thought that, well, my mother probably swept some of it out the back door.
In other words, a few little pieces might have been left from gathering them up.
As a matter of fact, about that time, approximately, we had laid a concrete slab in back of the kitchen door to mount a Bendix washing machine on. And we thought that, well, you know, if this happened before we laid that slab, there might be some of this underneath the slab. But I later talked to my dad. He said, no, we laid this slab after this happened. So,
no such luck. Buried like Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
So that was done afterward. Could there be... do you think there could be something left under that slab or around that slab?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be under it because the slab was laid before this happened.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, right now they built an addition to the house over where the slab was, so that's pretty well under building right now.
Uh-huh. Is there anything about all of this that you recollect that you have never told anybody from the press?
I think I've been pretty well drained of any
Picked
kind of
dry,
information.
Huh?
I want to say yes.
I'm thinking of myself as your dad, and if I had found one thing, and apparently, when your dad came home, was he really excited?
Yeah, that I do recall. He was excited, and obviously, you know, he was excited enough to go a little bit out of his way to go by the house and wake us up. So, yes, he was enthusiastic over this thing.
Okay, well, if he had that level of enthusiasm, and then they gave him, no doubt, some very stern talk about, look, this never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had been forced to hold up a balloon and tell a false story. That would go down pretty hard for a fairly proud man.
Well, you know, I remember him saying later that he didn't really mind because he was actually part of the cover. He went along with this, you know, because this is what he was told to do. And as a soldier, he followed the orders.
Of course. But still, to stand there with a balloon and to tell something that wasn't true would have gone down pretty... It could not have been easy for him.
Well, I guess inwardly, I'm not sure what effect it had on him. Outwardly, it didn't seem to bother him any.
What kind of dad was he? Was he a strict disciplinarian?
No, he was very generous with me. You know, I was the only kid, you know, a spoiled brat, got just about everything I wanted. And he was a very generous, very warm person with me.
Doctor, has all this in some way affected you now in life? I'm sure that everybody who knows the name Marcel asks you questions about this. Have you developed an interest in the subject, or have you gone the opposite way?
Well, you know, what I do is, since this happened, I surmise that that we're not alone in the universe, so I am a very avid astronomer, and I read everything I can about cosmology. And that's why I find that Martian meteorite so intriguing, because this is the first crack in the door where they're being able to prove perhaps that we are not alone, that there is certainly life forms elsewhere and as close as our doorstep on Mars.
So you are interested. Is this something
absolutely
that you developed later in life, or?
No, this has been since that time.
Since that time. So it really did affect you then and for the years that immediately followed that. It wasn't something that picked up later in life.
No,
when you began to...
because I always took it to be what it was. And I've always had my eyes to the sky. I will say I've never seen a UFO or a flying saucer. I keep looking.
Oh, I've seen one. It was a big triangular sucker. It came about 150 feet above me. I'm out here near the test area they call Dreamland. So,
well, I keep looking, but I've never seen anything I could not identify.
All right. I guess what I would like to do is, here's a fact I've got. When you interviewed John Kirby, I did, he played a wonderful tape Dr. Marcel had made of a telephone conversation he had with his father, who had just taken a film crew to the site of the crash, which Dr. Marcel just mentioned. Have you gone back? You went back to that site, did you not, and walked that same area?
Well, you know, I have to say I've never been to that exact site. I've been in the proximity. I've been out to the ranch, but I've never been to the exact site.
Never gone to the site?
No, sir.
What drove you to become a doctor?
Well, I guess partly family pressure. My uncle was a doctor, and, you know, I wanted to go in one of the fields of sciences. Actually, I was more interested in physical sciences, like physics and chemistry, but because of, I have to admit, pressure from the family, I went into medicine. I was interested in aviation or going into physics, and but I ended up in medicine.
Interesting. If you had to do it all over again, would you change that direction and instead move toward the sciences, do you think?
I think I would, yes. I'd definitely stay with the physical sciences.
Otherwise, what kind of man was your father? Was it a good, solid family relationship?
Oh, I think so. We were, you know, the three of us. We were close knit. So, you know, we did a lot of things together, and like I say, we were a pretty close family.
Okay. Again, I think a very important point is the one thing that seemed truly to be extraterrestrial, as depicted in that movie, was that foil that crumbled up and suddenly returned to its original shape. But you never saw one bit of that in terms of... Did you put your hands on that foil at all?
Oh, yeah. I handled it and looked at it. But I didn't really think so much of the foil as I did the being that had that writing on it. That was the thing that really set it off. I didn't pay much attention to the foil or that Bakelite debris. It was the... beam with the writing that really caught my eye.
You've seen Russian writing, have you not?
Yes, sir. Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah, not that.
It was
not that.
No.
I would think the only people then that that would have the ability to put something up that would make it about the globe would be at that time possibly the Russians, and that was my best shot there at whether it might be their writing. If it wasn't their writing,
no, it was,
then I cannot conceive of why we would do... What explanation, again, did they give for that?
I'm not sure what...
The military? That writing that you have talked about?
They said it was tape. As a matter of fact, I got a call from one of the Air Force declassification teams who I discussed with what I saw. He wanted to know what I saw, and I... told him, and he said, "Well, this is what we think you saw." And I said, "No, that's not what I saw." And he said, "Well, we think you saw a piece of scotch tape with some flowers on it from some toy manufacturer back east that they're using to put these kites back together with." And I said, "No, that was not flowers, and it wasn't tape." And so we didn't have not much of an agreement there.
Okay, can you remember the beam when you held the beam in your hand and you looked at the writing? Was it indented into the material the beam was made of? Was there an indentation that created this, or was it a paint, as though it were painted on?
You know, I do know it was kind of like a purple violet metallic hue, and it was written inside the length of this beam, and I don't recall really whether it was it had texture. It looked like it would have, but, and maybe I ran my fingernail across it. I don't really know whether I did that or not. I don't want to remember something that didn't happen.
Right. Right. Have you ever considered, and I'm sure you've been asked, to undergo some sort of regressive hypnosis to try and dredge? You know, it is, I think, possible to bring details from the human mind.
Well, you know, that was tried at one time, but I think I'm a very poor
subject.
Subject for hypnosis. I'm not a real strong believer in it. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's valid. And I guess I have a bias against it. But, so I don't think I was a very good subject for that.
And you know, I do too. And I think that people who have strong wills are very, very difficult to hypnotize. They simply will not allow it to occur to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They won't yield that kind of control. So
perhaps so.
So there's nothing to come from that, I guess. And were there any writings that your father left?
No, I've gone through there. Well, we have some of his records that we have not gone through. They're still in storage, and I have not seen anything that he put down on, you know, pen to paper on this thing. It's all word of mouth.
What happened to the car that held those parts? Sold?
Well, you know, we went on a vacation to Yellowstone National Park, and we moved from Roswell to Washington, D.C. Then we went on a vacation to Yellowstone Park, and coming back from Yellowstone, we stopped in Cincinnati, Ohio, and got a 1950 Studebaker. Traded the car in on a 1950 Studebaker.
Because one, of course, has to wonder whether some little artifact might have been left car. And somebody, no doubt, bought that car and drove it around and had no idea what that
was. God knows where it is now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm tempted to dip to the phone lines, let people ask a couple of questions of you. I really, really want to thank you for staying up. I know it's, I guess you had a long day today, and doctors have long days, period, so you've got another one coming tomorrow.
Yeah, it gets me kind of dragging after a while.
What happens, by the way, when people come to you, they have UFO conferences, probably now once a month someplace, big ones, and I'm sure you get invited.
Yes.
Have you gone to any of them?
Yeah, I go to an occasional one, regurgitate what I've already done today, you know, just this evening. Just kind of go over details, and I like to fold into my little talk or presentation the fact is that there's life elsewhere. I like to talk about the planetary systems that they're now describing and finding, and how the stuff of life itself is all over out there. So we're obviously not by ourselves.
Anymore. Every new thing we find, every new discovery, leads clearly in the direction of life.
Yeah.
Mars, Europa, new
and that's,
planets.
That little Martian meteorite may drive the final nail in the coffin of those who say there's no life elsewhere.
Were you surprised the other day when you heard the Clinton administration has scratched plans for a manned trip to Mars? They're talking now about sending robots.
And well, you know, robotic exploration can be very effective, too, and it's
sure.
certainly a lot more cost-effective. And it's certainly not as glamorous as sending a man to Mars, which we will do one of these days. But if we get there first just with robotic exploration,
mm-hmm.
So be it. Because that can yield extremely valuable information, too.
Have you looked at some of the research done by the likes of Richard Hoagland, the monuments of Mars, the face on Mars, so forth and so on?
Well, it's fascinating.
Isn't it? It is indeed. And to consider that there was life millions of years ago at the microbial level says to me, had there been a different atmosphere, life, of course, could have come and gone and left monuments that we now see. And for all we know, we could be ancestors of that life.
You know, I think Mars, the conditions right for life died too soon for any advanced civilization to have developed. If those monuments on Mars are really what we think they might be, they have to be put there by extraterrestrial.
So you're
of the solar system.
You're really almost a firm believer then, aren't you?
I am absolutely a firm believer.
How do you now remember your dad as just a very good father and family man?
Well, you know, as time goes on, you tend to remember the good things and forget the bad things. And, yes, I remember him very warmly now. And certainly miss his presence.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's been...
kind of regret, you know, because I'm having to take the heat now that he took for so long. And
that's right. That's right. And poor old you, you were just 12 years old.
Yeah,
and
just probably, kid, you know, here it is, you know, 50 years later.
A little foggy-eyed at 1 or 2 in the morning, yeah. And trying to always recollect things from that. Yikes.
Right.
All right, let me take one quick call and see if somebody's got a question for you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Jesse Marcel. Hello.
Hi, how you doing tonight, Art?
Fine. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, all right.
Yep. I just am fascinated that you have a Jesse on the show tonight, Junior. It's beautiful. And I was just wondering, when he handled any of that material, did he get a hold of any soft materials, and did he get sick later, him or his dick?
All right, that's good. Did anybody get ill or anything at all unusual that you would attribute to the handling of that material? Good
yeah,
question.
People asked that, about this, but no, there was no unusual events there. You know, they asked me to have any strange odor. No, I don't recall anything like that, and certainly no sickness that I could attribute to that. No strange viruses, I guess.
The again, going back to that material, the anomalous material that seemed to snap back into shape. If you didn't do that and you didn't note that, the movie, I'm trying to recall, had some young lady, I think, who did that, and the details are kind of foggy right now, but did you hear anything at all about that?
Yeah, not at the time. You know, this only years later when they started, you know, when people started coming out talking about this, did that attribute become known to me. Oh, I did. I do remember that my dad saying that he had one of his men take a sledgehammer and try to indent a larger piece of the metal and couldn't even scratch it.
Of the very light aluminum light?
Yes, I remember him saying that. But as far as the metal with the memory, I don't recall him ever saying anything like that. But I heard other people talk about that, but not for years after this.
So it's possible that that was myth.
I didn't witness it.
You didn't witness it. Well, what I really do appreciate is you're coming on here and telling us what you did witness. And now I know, and now everybody else knows. Doctor, it has been a distinct pleasure. I know you've got a very, very long day coming up.
Well, it is, unfortunately. I would love to continue this for hours, but unfortunately, the hour grows late, and early morning hours are coming up to me right now. So,
Dr. Marcel, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Art.
Take care, sir. That's Dr. Jesse Marcel, and he's the man who was there, and so they're not going to remove it. There are tanks and helicopters now. The fighting continues. Egypt's president is trying to arrange a three-way meeting in Cairo, maybe on Friday. We're putting pressure on the Israelis and doing everything but criticizing them publicly. If you read between the lines, we have done so. And I'm not sure what to say about it, except that I never did think that it was going to work. I believe, as I believe Benjamin Netanyahu believes, that ultimately, and at least in our lifetimes, let me qualify that, in our lifetimes, and perhaps that of our children, the Israelis are only going to be sustained by strength. And that peace accords with the Palestinians and ultimately with Syria are not going to work. You can't make peace with people who want you dead, who want you to not exist. And it's not going to work. And it's not working. The Senate sustained the abortion veto. And so there shall be partial birth abortions. They will continue. The president signed the maternity bill, keeping gals in the hospital for 48 hours minimum. Shannon Lucid is back, reclining in a big chair so she can get reacquainted with gravity. Newt Gingrich is in trouble. Democrats and Republicans on the committee that is investigating him have voted unanimously to expand the investigation. However, it turns out, it will not be known until after the election. So it is bad news for Gingrich, but good news, I suppose, for Bob Dole, who doesn't need a disabled Newt Gingrich right now. We'll have to see where that goes. Democrats, of course, calling for him to resign immediately from office. A judge in San Jose, California, has sentenced Richard Davis to death. And, Miller, in a statement just before he was to receive sentence, loud in court, that Polly Klass had begged him not to do her as her father had done her. And at that point, her father lunged at this bastard, and if he could, probably would have killed him. And I know it's a horrible thing to say, but it's too bad they don't have guns in courtrooms, because I kind of wish he had killed him. And I'll tell you something, if it had been me, I'd have tried to figure out there's a way to get guns in. You know, it can be done. There are guns that are largely a composite material. And if I had been that father, I would have done my damnedest to get something in there to kill that bastard with. And if he'd have said something like that, that would have been, of course, way over the line. And I recall the movie Seven. I wonder if you remember the movie Seven. If you haven't seen it, you should, if you can handle heavy material. And at the very end of that movie, there was a police officer whose wife had been killed, and he was just receiving that information as he drew a bead on the killer. And it was a very dramatic moment in the movie, and you could see in that man's head the wheels turning, knowing he was a cop, knowing he couldn't put a bullet in this guy because he was a cop, but knowing that the guy at the end of the barrel had just murdered horribly his wife. And you could see him torn for a period of time. And had it ended any other way, I could not have handled it. He blew that guy away. And I would have too. And it's funny, when I saw that courtroom scene yesterday with Mr. Klass, I thought of the movie Seven, and I thought, if I can tell you, I would have killed, given any opportunity, I would have killed. Have you ever wondered about that? What would bring you to the point where you would kill? Well, that's an easy call for me, and I would have done it without remorse. Without remorse. Goodbye. Do whatever you're going to do in the next life. Be judged there, because you're out of here now. No 10 years on appeals here. I'd have strangled him. I'd have put something around his throat. I'd have broken his neck, or if I could have gotten a gun in, I'd have shot him. So I don't blame him, and I wonder how you reacted to it. Believe it or not, President Clinton is on the way toward a Nobel Peace Prize for what he has done in Bosnia. Wonder if they had to wait until the troops leave, if they do, as he promised, before they issue this. Because I've got a feeling that Bosnia is going to return to exactly what it was when we leave. If we leave. Maybe to keep the Nobel, the troops are going to have to stay there. I don't know. Here is the story, the Associated Press story. Thank you to one of my affiliates on that six-year-old child. Talked about that a few days ago. These days, a kiss isn't just a kiss, not even in the first grade. A six-year-old boy who kissed a girl on the cheek was, as you must have heard by now, suspended last week on the grounds of sexual harassment. Jackie Prevett said the school overreacted to an innocent peck on the cheek by banishing her son, Jonathan, to a room apart from his classmates. Jonathan said the girl asked him to kiss her, that he was expressing friendship, according to the mother. Now, of course, insanity. Sexual harassment, a six-year-old kissing a six-year-old, a peck on the cheek. It's almost too insane to imagine, and yet in today's world, it occurs. I asked you the other night, and will again this morning, to come up with a presidential promise. There is absolutely no reason for you to keep it. We know that nominees promise you anything and never deliver. So if you were going to run for president, what would you promise the American people? To get their vote, to ensure getting yourself into the White House, what would you promise? No limits. No reason to keep the promise. I'm just asking you, if you were going to concoct a big one, you know, a really big one, to entice the American people to vote for you, what would it be? Kevin and Rebecca, listening to Kern in Bakersfield, sent me some emails, said, Art, here's a presidential promise for re-election from President Clinton. I promise a blonde in every bedroom. And I've got a couple little things here I wanted to read you. A boy was crossing a road one day when a frog called out to him and said, if you kiss me, I'll turn into a beautiful princess. Bending over, he picked the frog up, put it in his pocket, began to walk off. The somewhat agitated frog, at this point, spoke up again and said, if you kiss me and turn me back into a beautiful princess, I'll stay with you for 1 week. Well, the boy took the frog out of his pocket and looked at it, thought for a moment, smiled, put it back. Well, now the frog was getting really quite huffy, cried out, okay, look, if you kiss me and turn me into a beautiful princess, I'll stay with you and do anything you want me to do. Well, he stopped again, took the frog out, smiled at it, put it back in his pocket, and proceeded apace. Finally, the frog began yelling, what the hell's the matter with you? I've told you I'm a beautiful princess. I've said I'd stay with you for a whole week and offered to do anything you want. Why won't you kiss me? The boy said, look, I'm an engineer. I don't have time for a girlfriend, but a talking frog is really cool. That would certainly be the answer of an engineer, huh? Sorry, I don't have time for a girlfriend, but you know, a talking frog. Well, that's really cool. Then there's one more little one, and then we'll just open the lines and see what the night brings. But I thought this was cute. Two hunters got a pilot to fly them into the far north for elk hunting. They were quite successful in their venture and bagged six big bucks. So the pilot came back, as arranged, to pick them up. They began loading their gear into the plane, including these six elk. But the pilot objected and said, look, the plane can only take out four of your elk. You'll have to leave two behind. So they argued with him. The year before, they had also shot six, and the pilot had allowed them to put all on board. The plane was just the same model and capacity as this one. Reluctantly, the pilot finally permitted them to put all six aboard. But when they attempted to take off and leave the valley where they were, the little plane couldn't make it and crashed into the wilderness. Climbing out of the wreckage, one hunter said to the other, do you have any idea where we are? Replied the other, I think so. I think this is about where the same place the last plane crashed last year. By the way, one other little item, the Israelis, besides having terrible problems with the Palestinians right now, and the other way around, I suppose, are seeing UFOs, massive reports of UFOs, egg-shaped spacecrafts, they say. And this is being reported in, well, as a matter of fact, this is an Associated Press article I've got. Some blame it on an invasion of American culture, but I think not. I think something is going on in the area of Israel, and I just thought I would pass it on to you, but the number of reports coming from Israel have quadrupled. I mean, there are just all kinds of reports coming from the Middle East now of UFOs. What do you make out of that?
Now we take you back to the night of September 26th, 1996, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
One last thing, he says again. From a Science in Brief article, there is a Japanese satellite that was just put up and took a photograph, which has been rendered then in various colors, so we might know what we're seeing, of the Earth's ozone hole. And the image above, and I've got it here, shown by the newest Japanese satellite to be launched, shows a rapidly developing late winter Antarctic ozone hole. And it is a big hole. I mean, we're not talking about what you've typically seen, and you remember you've seen pictures of the Earth with a sort of strangely inkblot-shaped little hole that sort of rotates around the Antarctic area. This thing would appear to be covering, I'm going to guess, at about between about a third of the globe, a gigantic ozone hole. And the person that sent me this said, shades of Ed Dames. Huh, Art. And it sure is. And I don't know about global warming. I've always had an open mind, and I've been unsure about those who talk about global warming. But I think this ozone hole thing is for real. Just thought I'd pass that along. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Jason from Fresno, California, via KMJ.
KMJ, of course.
I'm going to make two comments, and then I'm going to get off the radio.
All right.
Number one. Three nights ago, when you were talking about the midnight paralysis, or the paralysis in the middle of the night.
Talking about that, yes, well, we had a big guest on that last night, yes.
It almost gave me a heart attack because that also happened to me. And I know you don't want any more reports, but it is a real phenomenon.
Oh, I know.
And number two, the caller that had just called in and talked about the man in Florida, you need to look that up. I'm sure there's going to be other callers that know his name, but it's something like Rasputin or Ralph some night. In Search of did an expose on him.
How did they determine he moved the stones?
They cannot be moved at this day. They're so heavy, no mechanical device can lift them at this day.
Hmm.
Yet they are in really nice, coordinated, like clockwork positions where people that are only like 20 or 40 pounds, little kids can push them. And they'll turn. You have to see it for yourself. It's called something garden in Florida.
All right.
I'm sure a lot of callers are going to call in and tell you all about
I'm
it.
I'm sure they are.
All right.
Thank you very much. So apparently some structure built in a way that nobody is able to understand. I wonder what the best speculation is about how he did it, and he wouldn't show anybody. Maybe he had the same secrets the Egyptians had, huh? What do you think? What do you think they're going to find inside the Sphinx? Are you disturbed, upset, that they're going to be opening this in December? I have mixed feelings about it, and I'm going to be interested to speak with Mr. Bavall and Mr. Hancock tomorrow night. They are adamantly opposed at this point to the opening of this chamber and the manner in which it's going to be opened. There are others who are very much interested in its being opened, and I'm going to have to shut my mouth or I'm going to get in trouble here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Yes, hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell me more about the Newt Gingrich? I didn't catch anything about that.
Well, he is accused, and it's not all out in the public right now, of maybe making some bad tax moves with regard to a course that he held. And they are investigating that, and apparently more, because they're going to expand the investigation. So that's about all I know. There are tax questions. And the network coverage I saw last night on NBC seemed to feel it was really big trouble for Newt Gingrich. I don't know I would say that right now. I don't know.
With all the trouble that Clinton's been in?
Yeah.
And now they want to hammer him?
Point. It's a good point. Well, there is a certain revenge factor here. You may recall the last Speaker of the House who had to leave.
Foley?
You may recall Newt Gingrich had quite a bit to do with that.
Uh-huh.
And I think there is a big revenge factor here. However, it's worth bearing in mind that the Ethics Committee investigating voted unanimously to expand the investigation. That means all the Republicans on it as well. So maybe there is something here.
Okay, well, thanks, Art. I just want to let you know that I'm John calling from Milwaukee on... What station is this?
What station is this?
WTMJ.
WTMJ. All right, thank you very much. There's a big struggle going on, and I got some calls earlier today, and there's a lot of things right now that, or for the sake of the individuals involved, I'm not going to discuss on the air tonight. But I am going to tell you this. Nearly anything can happen tomorrow night. As you know, in the first hour of the program, I've got Zachariah Sitchins scheduled. And in the second hour, beginning in the second hour, Graham Hancock and Robert Bouval are going to be here. And I wish I could tell you more right now, but it might disturb things, so I'm not going to. But I can tell you there is a great power struggle going on, the likes of which you can barely imagine. Some reading on Richard Hoagland's webpage, available through mine, might go some way toward explaining that to you. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm Mallory Cross in Missoula, Montana.
Well, hi.
Shall I give you my phone number? Is this the Art Bell program?
This is Art Bell. No, don't give us your phone number.
What?
You'd be giving that to millions of people. You don't want to do that.
Okay, well, you mean I'm actually on the radio? Hear me. I'm calling about tomorrow night, the Pyramids,
yes.
Graham Hancock and Robert Bouval.
Bouval.
Because I just moved here from Spain.
Yes.
3 months ago, and I wrote him a letter when I read his book in June, and I have two books, but he hasn't answered, maybe didn't get it. I have two books about pyramids found in South America.
Would you turn your radio off for us, please?
Oh, yeah. Does that confuse it?
Yes.
I have a book written in 1935... That's a diary of a man who went in with a group, and they found somewhere between Brazil and Venezuela pyramids with perhaps survivors they thought might have been the slaves of the people who built the pyramids, surrounded by such high mountains, nobody could ever figure out where they were after. And they found gold objects, and they found all sorts of things about the pyramids related to the kind of thing he wrote in his book.
Well, as a matter of fact,
I want to communicate with him.
All right, well, he'll be here tomorrow night, so call in.
Yeah, but I've been calling you for 1 hour and one half every few seconds to get through. And that's why I called. That's why I want you, at least, or somebody, to have a way that Hancock can contact me, because I have another book about the...
Okay, well,
you heard about the stones in Ica, Peru, that have engravings on them from the time of the
yes.
dinosaurs?
Yes, I have.
I have that book in Spanish.
Okay, ma'am?
Yeah.
You're going to have to communicate with me in another way. I'm the only one here right now. I can't take your number.
Okay, can you give me some other way to communicate with you?
Yes, call this number before the show tomorrow.
Yeah? What time does that mean? 5 minutes before, 10 minutes?
Yeah, 5 or 10 minutes, anywhere from a half hour on before the program.
Okay.
All right? I'll look forward to that. Thank you. That's the best I can do for you. Obviously, I'm in the middle of a program right now, so I can't just stop and do it. I try to answer calls, I guess I should tell all of you, as I'm able to before and sometimes after a program. I can't always do it, but I try to do the best I can. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Going once.
Art.
Yes.
I'm calling from Fort Myers, Florida.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. A week or so ago, you on one of your programs, you mentioned a book that was written by a gentleman, I believe It was about an incident that happened in the Gulf War on the USS George Washington. Do you recall that book?
No, I don't, ma'am.
Is there any way you could research later on and mention that?
What was the incident?
Beg your pardon?
What was the incident?
The book was about an incident. You didn't say. You just said it was an incident that the government or the Navy had kept secret or something until now. And this gentleman, I thought you said the author's name was Hudson, but I cannot get any information.
Oh, you're referring to a book called Black Alert.
Yes.
Is that right?
It was Black something.
Black Alert, yep. That's a book that we advertised for a while, written by Julian Hudson. And I'm going to tell you the best way I think that you can proceed. And that is to contact my network, and I'd be glad to give you the number.
Okay.
It's area code 541.
Okay.
664-8829.
829.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and
The last name is H-U-D-S-O-N?
Yes.
Okay, because I went to my local Barnes & Noble, and they don't have anything on it.
Okay, well, you probably didn't have the title, and you didn't have the author's name, so they wouldn't be able to look it up. Now that you've got the title and the author's name, they can order it.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay, I sure do appreciate it.
Okay, take care. When you go to a bookstore, generally you've got to have something to go on. You can't say a book about this is something that happened in the Gulf War. You've got to have the author's name or the title of the book. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art Bell?
Yes.
How's it going? My name's Rick in Arvada.
Hello.
And I'm listening to you on KL.
Yes, sir, in Denver.
Yeah, and I was wondering, I've been reading this book lately. It's called The Illuminatus Trilogy. And I was wondering if you had knew anything about The Illuminatus?
Not allowed to say anything about it.
You're not allowed?
No, as a 99th degree Mason, they won't let me talk about The Illuminati.
So you're a 99th degree Mason?
If you wish to believe that. What do you want to say about the Illuminati?
Well, I was just wondering if you had any insight onto what was going on, because I've been reading that book for a while.
Well, then you should have insight.
Well,
what did the book teach you?
The book is just teaching me a lot of weird stuff.
Is it?
There's a lot of startling, realities into it, and I'm just wondering if, you know, what you thought about that whole situation, or if you believe that it's real or not.
Not particularly.
Not particularly?
To tell you the truth.
Well, yeah, you know. But I guess the book never got a chance to be classified as fiction or not.
How do you view it?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe that it's not real.
Maybe that it's not real.
So,
well, then regard it as entertainment and enjoy reading, sir. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, Art?
Yes.
Yeah, they discovered another asteroid that's near the Earth, but they said that it will miss the Earth. Did you hear about that?
No, but they're always discovering asteroids that are going to be near misses. And what I always wonder is whether we're going to hear about the one that will get us.
Yeah, well there's going to be...
I mean, will there be an Associated Press story? Will Dan Rather sit there and say, well, scientists today discovered an asteroid 6 to 8 miles wide that is going to impact the Earth on Saturday?
Oh.
You think you'd hear about that?
I believe so.
I think more likely you would see the breaking news logo after you felt the ground shake, and you would hear CNN begin to report about what had just hit Earth. That's what I think is more likely.
Yes. Yeah, we always hear about it when it's too late.
Exactly. Like the bullet, sir, you never hear the one or see the one that gets you. And I'm told by astronomers, amateur and professional alike, that is probably true. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Hello there.
Yes.
Hello.
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 This is the Art Bell Show.
Good guess.
Great. I've been dialing for hours.
Well, now you've made it.
Great. Tonight we were watching the eclipse, and we were into the talking about different things, and we were... And then we got into the discussion of the pyramids, and I understand that you were talking about the pyramids.
Oh, yes.
And I have read Graham...
Hancock's
book. Hancock's book, which was very intriguing, Fingerprints of the Gods.
Yes.
Footprints of the Gods, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Fingerprints, actually.
fingerprints?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought it was footprints, but okay, fingerprints. But anyway, from reading, and then his other cohorts that he mentions in the book, something about Osiris. I read his other book. I'm trying to speak quickly, so I don't take up too much of your time. But from all these different books about, I think it was Serpent. I'm sorry. I can't think of all the...
Sir, forget the books. What are you trying to say?
Okay, what I'm trying to say is all these different theories that with the shafts and all these things, what happened? Something came to me as a revelation of the way things are lined up in the desert. Could these pyramids have been beacons?
Well, you've asked a central question that everybody is trying to answer. In other words, what are the pyramids? Why are they there? What lies beneath the Sphinx and other chambers that have yet to be explored? There are many people, knowledgeable people, who think that there is a virtual library of information within the Sphinx. It is entirely possible. There has been a license issued to open the hidden chamber of the Sphinx in December of this year. And I know a lot more about this right now than I can tell you about. A lot of it will become, I think, apparent tomorrow night. So in the interest of not beginning a war here, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and say that you should listen tomorrow night, and I don't guarantee what you're going to hear. If that sounds overly dramatic to you, I'm sorry, but I'm trying to give you some sense that there's something dramatic, very dramatic going on without getting into it for the sake of the fact that by tomorrow night it may be resolved, and I only hope that it is, or it's going to be one rough ride tomorrow night. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, this is Nathan calling from San Antonio with the mighty WAI.
Hi there.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
You mentioned about the tones the other day, and I had gotten off work late. I missed the latter part of that conversation. What exactly were those tones that you were talking about?
Well, you didn't hear the show?
No, I missed the...
Okay, number one, you've got to turn your radio off or we can't talk.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yes.
I'll wait.
Okay. Jennifer, can you say that?
Jennifer, thank you.
Jennifer, thank you. Okay.
There were some tones, an auto dialer, that broke into the middle of a conversation after 2.5 hours
mm-hmm.
and began to auto dial a certain number. We traced that number, or I should say determined what that number was, and it yields a very strange tone indeed. So something was in the middle of our line after 2.5 hours of the line being open between Whitley Strieber and myself.
Oh, I see.
Okay, that's it.
Interesting. Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well, in fact, there was a Whitley Strieber symposium up in Austin that I was going to go to. I heard about that. Had you heard about that?
No.
Okay, I'd missed that. I wanted to go see that. Supposedly he was going to speak there. And I've been understanding that he was from San Antonio, and I wanted to hear him.
He is, and I had him on the air for 3 hours the other night. You missed it?
I did. I listen to your show all the time, and I love it.
So you missed the show, and you missed the symposium.
Yeah. I do have another question for you. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Okay. When we decide actually to send a probe to Mars and explore it, do they have any landing sites that are picked? I would imagine that the Pyramids of Elysian or whatever they're called would be one major site, or those pyramids where the...
Cydonia, sir. Cydonia is the region.
Oh, Cydonia?
Yes. But my feeling is they will not go to Cydonia. They don't want to go to Cydonia. I appreciate the call. They don't want to review with orbiting craft Cydonia. For some reason, NASA has an aversion to going back to Cydonia. You tell me why.
You're You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 26th, 1996.
First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Fine.
Good. This is Steve from Santa Barbara.
Hi there.
I had an idea. You know, the gentleman you were talking to last night, he was talking about out-of-body experiences and how he could go anywhere.
Yes.
And I thought, wouldn't it be great if he could, like, go to that chamber underneath the Sphinx and, like, report to you what he saw?
That'd be great.
And I thought, you know, he said he was pretty accurate when he was doing that with...
100%, he
yeah,
said.
And maybe, mm-hmm. would it be possible that you could arrange that with him?
Well, I mean, you have suggested it. I'm sure he's listening, so maybe he'll do it.
That'd be great, because then we could find out more or less kind of a preview of what it would be.
Well, I'm willing to take anybody's remote-viewed answer. We're going to know in December. And I do believe that it is going to go forward. So if you can remote view it, any psychics who want to make a rep for themselves, this is your chance. For those who travel out of body, those who have various means of divining these things, submit it to me now. Who knows, you might be right. Then you'll have a big rep after December when they find exactly what you have described. It is a wonderful opportunity. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Hey, sir. Art. Yes.
Earlier you were talking about the movie Seven.
Yes.
Okay, at the end of it, you may have to go back and watch it. He didn't blow him away because he killed his wife. He blew him away because the wife was pregnant and it was the baby he had cut out and had in a box.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
It was her head.
Okay, we was watching it over the weekend, and a friend of mine told us that it was her pregnant baby.
Well, you probably need to go back and rewatch it, sir.
Okay, but the question I called about her...
Anyway, it doesn't much matter, does it?
Either way, yeah, he had it coming.
Yeah, and either way, I put myself in that position, and it's an interesting question. That is to say, hold on the line for a second, sir. What it would take for you to kill? Have you ever thought about that? I thought about that today when I watched Polly Klass's father. Take what I could not have. I could not have taken that. Of course, they got him out of there very quickly because they knew that if he'd had an opportunity to kill the guy, and I would have too. I can tell you right now, because I really have sat down and I've thought about it. If somebody killed a member of my family, I would not. If I had the opportunity to settle matters myself before the police settled them, I would do that. And I'd let a jury of my peers decide my fate. And if it meant jail or worse, then so be it. If somebody broke into my house with intent on doing me harm, I would have no compunction at all about blowing them away. None. And I can assure you, if I were in a situation as Mr. Klass had been in, if I could have put my hands around the guy's neck and choked the life out of him, I would have done it. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, you're talking about you had your earlier interview with the man about the pieces from the crash?
The man was Dr. Marcel.
Yeah,
yes.
But about the first 15 minutes, I'm calling from Little Rock, Arkansas, the first 15 minutes, they didn't air your program. I didn't know if there was something in that 15 minutes they didn't want us to hear.
Oh, yes, that's where all the secrets were told.
They had something about a man, some other show, and I guess it crossed the line, and I didn't know if there was something. I just didn't know if you guys were talking about something important we missed. We caught the last 45 minutes, just the first 15 minutes they didn't air your show.
That's where he described the beings that he watched. He watched cut up on the table.
Oh, okay.
So you missed all that.
All right, so we didn't really miss nothing important in the first.
No, you really didn't.
Okay.
All right?
All right, dude, thanks.
All right, thank you. We're talking about the recollections, I believe, accurate and honest, of a young man who saw his father come home with what Dr. Marcel firmly today believes were pieces of an extraterrestrial craft. Described calmly and as best he was able to recall. By the way, for those of you who did not hear it and have seen the movie, I asked him about the material, you know, that supposedly crumpled and then opened right back up again. And Dr. Marcel recalls no such material. and did not personally attempt to do that and did not see anybody else who did it. So short of the movie, which I'm disinclined to buy, I mean, I think it was took some dramatic license, after all. They suggested that Dr. Marcel had a piece that he kept, which he did not. So it is possible that now, with the Palestinians, about 55 dead, and this is either going to resolve itself peacefully at some point with all the overtures, or it's not. And the answer may be not. It may be the beginning of a civil war in Israel, what amounts to a civil war. And I never really did think that this was going to work out with the Palestinians. Obviously, it is not working out at the moment. And I don't think in the long term it is, and I don't think in our lifetimes the Israelis are going to make any sort of peace with the Palestinians or the Syrians. But it's a horrible situation, and it continues. Now, we were told about some place in Florida, a very interesting place, last hour, and I, frankly, have not been familiar with it. Art, the place in Florida is called the Coral Castle. That's from Linda in Fresno. Then I got this, too. Art, I saw a report on that gentleman in Florida several years ago. He said he discovered the secrets of the Great Pyramids and how they were built. He then proceeded to build a house for his deceased wife, who died years before, stating the secrets also revealed time travel. A door of that house, or to that house, weighs 4 tons. It is perfectly balanced and can be moved with a finger. Also a 2-ton perfectly balanced rocking chair. This man one day disappeared without a trace. Isn't that fascinating? Well, now, this one has escaped me somehow. Or this, dear Art, the place in Florida is called the Coral Castle. Here it is again. I've been there. I'm trying to get through to you now. If you want, you can call me, blah, blah, blah. This is Stu in Fort Lauderdale. Oh, in Florida. Well, maybe I'll call him. I've got his number here. I think I ought to call Stu and find out what he knows about this place and about this story. It's kind of interesting. Could he have discovered, do you suppose, the secrets the ancient Egyptians had? And how in the world could he have done what he has done? Maybe I'll pick up the phone and call him.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 26th, 1996.
All right, because I'm willing to do nearly anything anytime, we have Stu down in Florida. And he knows about this place called Coral Castle. Stu, welcome to the program. Wait a minute. There you are. Stu, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. What do you know about this place?
Okay. Well, pretty much what the other fact you read was there's this very slight man from Latvia, where he came from. He was like about maybe 5'2", weighed about 105 pounds. And he built this house for his supposedly sweetheart.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing is carved out of solid slabs of coral.
Coral.
And there's a two-story structure there, which is built out of solid slabs of coral, and there's a fence around the property, which are made of, the walls of the fence are made of slabs of coral. If you go outside the perimeter, you can see where the slabs of coral were lifted up out of the ground. Like, if they were laid back down, they would fill the hole completely. But it's unimaginable how it was hewn out of a solid chunk of coral. And in this fence wall, there is a piece of coral, maybe about 4 feet wide by about 6 or 8 feet high,
right,
with a spindle going through it. And it's so perfectly balanced that you can just push it with your finger and it'll spin around like a revolving door. There's all sorts of astrological shapes carved out of coral mounted on the walls.
And this thing, these stones weigh tons?
Tons. And there's primitive blocks and tackle there. Supposedly he did it all by himself with primitive block and tackle. And they say he had known the secrets of how the pyramids were built.
Well, is that a myth, or is there some documentation
for
it?
No, there's absolutely no documentation. That is
no documentation. So there's probably a lot of myth that has grown up about this, but still, how could he have done that?
Nobody knows. It's like nobody knows how we built the pyramid. Nobody knows how this...
Well, if he really had the secret of how to do that, and or time travel, and or levitation, and he's now dead?
Supposedly, yes.
Supposedly dead or disappeared?
Yeah, I think he's passed on.
Passed on.
But it's a tourist attraction down in South Miami in the Homestead area.
Pretty selfish to, you know, leave the world with such incredible secrets.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And it's a tourist attraction. I have some pictures of it that I've taken. If you'd like, I'll send them to you.
I would love it.
And I'll try to get some information from them and send it on to you. Also, if you like their phone number, they're in the phone book.
Well, it wouldn't do me any good this time of the day, but photographs would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. You look at it, you just wonder how somebody could have done this all by themselves, or even with some heavy equipment.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you send them, I'll put them up on the Internet.
I will get them out to you.
All right, my friend. Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Take care, Stu. That's Stu in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So it's real. But it's hard for me to believe that somebody would have secrets of that magnitude and keep it to themselves and take it to their grave. Block and tackle? I don't think so. 4-ton stones, one man? I don't think so. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Eddie, and I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes, Eddie.
I was just listening earlier this week, somebody by the name of Al that was on your show.
Yes.
And he was talking about sleep paralysis.
That was last night.
Yeah, and that was last night. He was very unconvincing. I've had the episode. And what he said wasn't very convincing to, I think, a lot of your viewers probably, too.
Well, I don't have viewers, Eddie. I have listeners. This is radio.
Yes, I mean listeners. I'm sorry. And I was just wondering if it was possible that there is another scenario in the sleep paralysis itself, and that there's different kinds of sleep paralysis for different reasons, such as possibly UFOs and
UFOs.
Stuff like that. Well, maybe having something to do with it in some respects, and maybe and not in others.
Well, that's not very convincing, Eddie.
Yes.
I mean, if you have proof, then on the other hand.
Yes, that's what I was wondering, if you could maybe commit to answering some questions in the future like that.
How could I answer that?
Well, there's a lot of people out there that claim...
Eddie, slow up. Sorry. You said he was not very convincing. I rather thought he was. So did everybody.
Yes, he was convincing.
No. Eddie's, please, let me finish.
I'm sorry, sir.
He was, to me, convincing, and to many of my listeners, because I got a million different faxes, but... having said what you said, it seems to me you're offering up a significantly more implausible explanation without any proof.
Yes, that might be true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Eddie.
Thank you.
Take care. In other words, you're not buying into his explanation of the power of the mind, which seems rather plausible, and to me you're jumping to a rather implausible explanation, particularly for such a widespread phenomenon, and attributing it to UFOs? UFOs? Really? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tim from Omaha.
Hi, Tim.
Two Omaha calls in a row.
True.
How are you doing?
I'm doing.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
If you're driving along and somebody tails you in the car, what do you usually do if they want you to get out of your car and start a fight?
If I'm in a car and somebody is tailgating me, is that what you're asking?
Right, and you pull into a restaurant and
yes,
and you're in the parking lot of the restaurant and they pull in behind you and want you to get out of your car. What would you do? Strange question, isn't it?
It is a strange question.
I know that you're probably packing, you know. So, I don't know.
Are you asking whether I would shoot somebody over a tailgate? No.
No. I'm talking, would you just drive away, and what would you do if he followed you for an amount?
If somebody came after me,
mm-hmm.
I'm I'm probably going to protect myself. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
That's all. I doubt that I would provoke a fight, but I doubt that I would walk away from one either. I mean, if somebody takes a swing at me, I'm going to swing back in half.
And I have one more question for you.
Sure.
Mr. I think it, in Russia it's Mr. Levitz, I think it is.
Lebed.
Lebed, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I guess he's the one who's going to take over when Boris Yeltsin goes under the blade, I guess.
Well, actually, the transfer of power has already occurred, and Mr. Yeltsin is in the hospital.
Hmm.
And Mr. Lebed will retain power until Mr. Yeltsin is healthy enough to reclaim his office or goes kaput under the blade, one of the two.
Is it true that one of Mr. Levitt's icons is Francisco Franco?
Well, I don't know. That I don't know.
That I think I read that in the paper somewhere.
He's an interesting character, and what I have heard of Levitt is not necessarily all bad. He is a very traditional Russian and said to be fairly honest and not typical of a lot of Russians.
I know you're coming up on a break here. I just have one more thing to add, that on the other night I was watching The Tonight Show, or I think it was either Tonight Show or Conan O'Brien, and they had Dan Aykroyd on, and he was talking about the Chupacabra.
Really?
He was. I guess Dan Aykroyd has a show coming up about sort of like what you do.
He does?
He does.
It wouldn't seem like...
The paranormal.
It wouldn't seem like Dan Aykroyd's kind of thing. I thought he was a comedian.
Well, he was a Ghostbuster.
Well... All right.
Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. Take care. It wouldn't seem like a natural subject for him. When I tackle these topics, I try and do it seriously. I will walk off into humor occasionally, but I try and treat these subjects seriously. And I would think that would be very difficult for Mr. Aykroyd. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Hello, Mr. Bell.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm calling from Galveston, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I wanted to talk about that guy who just called a little while ago. He said he was talking about an old guy in Florida.
Yes.
Who
built a structure with stones and nobody can figure out
a coral. Yeah, I saw that on In Search Of. I don't remember the name either, but I remember it was pretty remarkable looking. And the guy was they said he was about 105 pounds. He's a very frail old man, and
right,
and he somehow got this stuff to. I mean, some people said that he actually had this stuff levitate. I mean, it was some amazing stuff.
Well, maybe he built the blocks in place. Anybody consider that? That's been suggested about the pyramids as well. If you could not carry or move the blocks, and nobody today can figure out how they did that,
yeah.
Maybe they built them, literally poured them in place.
Yeah, it could be.
One possibility.
Yeah, and I wanted to comment about that monster who said that stuff to Polyclos's father. I mean,
yeah.
that guy, he couldn't die soon enough, man. I mean, you're absolutely right. That guy, I mean, if he did that to my daughter, I would...
Kill him. I mean, yeah. There are conditions under which a reasonably well-balanced person is capable of murder.
Exactly.
And it would be murder. There's no question about that.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't hesitate.
I know. I wouldn't either. I mean, he's scum, and he'll be seeing, like Mr. Clark said, he'll be seeing Hitler and Dahmer, all the rest in hell pretty soon.
That's right. I believe that too. Thank you. That affected me. Watching that encounter in the courtroom and listening to that bastard absolutely affected me, and it began a process of my thinking about killing. And it's a pretty terrible thing to think about, isn't it? But I guarantee you, had I been that man, I could have killed him without a second thought. And I would have tried. And if somebody messed with somebody in my family and killed them or attempted to harm them, I would have no compunction. I guarantee you I would take them out and deal with the consequences later. Thought about that? Have you ever? It's not a particularly pleasant thing to think about, but something like that causes you to do it. And I think most reasonable people A well-balanced, reasonable people under those circumstances are absolutely capable of murder. Whatever you want to call it, I suppose the DA would call it murder and charge you, so be it. Like the average, well-balanced person is absolutely capable of it. How about you? First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jonathan in Seattle, Washington.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you very, very much for informing your listeners last night about the space shuttle reentry. I was lucky enough to be on my way home from work when I heard you announce this, and I got home to West Seattle.
Well, now, I read a fax, and we were an hour. The person who sent the fax was wrong by an hour.
Right, right. But luckily, my drive is about an hour long.
Ah.
I got home, turned on the news about 15 minutes prior to its skating the atmosphere, and it was unbelievably spectacular.
Well, I, of course, went outside. I determined to. I was watching CNN after the program, and I found out it was an hour off, and it was due to land at 5:13. So I figured somewhere around 5 o'clock or 15 minutes before it would touch down or 20 minutes, I would see it here, but we didn't see it here. I knew it was going to be seen in Seattle. What did you see, and where was it? Where did it come across the sky?
It was exactly coming out of the... It would be the west-northwest area.
Right.
You know, over the Pacific.
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to be standing there when I was just struck, just dumbfounded, because I literally was looking in the right direction at the right time, and it just started to spark slowly and then burn solidly. Just at the horizon line, just above the horizon, and it followed almost a straight line across the horizon.
Well, in that case, I would imagine the people up further north, in Canada,
right,
and then maybe even in Alaska, got quite a show. It probably came right up above them.
Right. It was my time. It was 4:42, and then I followed the CNN. Report from NASA, and it landed exactly 35 minutes later in Florida.
Well, I got to see it once, and it was incredible. It began on the western horizon about 20 degrees above the horizon as kind of an orange blur.
Right.
And suddenly that orange blur turned into an orange streak, and it just went flying right across the horizon. Absolutely awesome.
Exactly. Just fabulous.
Yep. Did you hear a boom?
No, could not hear any sound. I think it was probably too far north. By the CNN indicator, it was right on the border of Washington and Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see what some Canadians were able to observe. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's open the line. Thank you very much for Canada. Let me see. Would everybody else on the west of the Rockies line hold up for a moment during this break? I want to hear from Canada. Did anybody in Canada, maybe up in Alberta, that would have been about, seems like ground zero for a overhead pass. Anybody up there happen to catch the reentry? When you do, and when it is close, it is absolutely awesome. And, of course, it depends on the final orbit. That is to say, who's going to see it? Sometimes it comes across, literally right across Central California. Really, really cool. So if you're in Canada and you saw it, call me at 1-800-618-8255. Canada, 1-800-618-8255, or Alaska. Now, the Alaskans may also have been treated to quite a show. I'm glad that some of you realized the person who sent me the fax was off by about an hour, but I'm sure you went to CNN, and so many of you must have seen it. All right, we'll pause here at the bottom of the hour. This is Open Line, Unscreened. Liz. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, Art?
So you're up in Alberta, eh?
Yes, sir.
All right, did you go out and take a look?
I did. I'm not into the astrological things, but after talking to you, I just had to see it.
And
I had to see it.
So you wandered out, and what did you see? What where did it cross the sky?
It crossed right over the horizon, going eastward, kind of southeast. Bright red orange streak.
Wow.
It was cool.
So it came, you say the horizon, it went directly overhead?
Well, a little bit south of me.
A little bit south, but
well, that's what it looked like to me.
But,
I mean,
all right,
around
well,
the building.
You probably had the premier view then.
Probably. Looked good to me.
Yeah, it really is neat to see that shuttle come back.
Yeah, I work graveyard shifts at an alarm company also.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that beeping sound you wanted to know if it was an alarm?
Yes.
Can you play it back and I'll check and see if it sounds like anything we use?
I'd have to go hunt up the number again. I did that the other day. You didn't hear it when I
heard it, but I just wanted to see if it sounded anything like ours.
Well, I hate to do it again. Maybe I will, though. I'll see if I can hunt up the number.
Okay.
All right?
If it sounds like a bunch of really quick beeps with a pause between them, that's what alarms sound like.
Yeah. It was obviously looking for a response of some kind.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, so that's my best guess. Thank you very much. So there you are. See, Alberta got a pretty good look. I thought Alberta would be about right. Now, the Alaskans would have had a good look had it not been for nearly total cloud cover over Fairbanks and Anchorage. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art Bell?
Yes.
Hi, I just have a quick question on if you've been... those conferences up in Minnesota, UFO conferences, have you been on any of those yet?
Never.
Never. I was wondering, do you know of any that's coming up?
There was one just in Tampa, and I'm not frankly certain where the next one is coming, but they're coming almost on a monthly basis now.
Okay.
So, why, are you wanting to go to one?
I'm going to the one in Minnesota on October 5th.
Oh, I see.
I'm wondering if you do any of those.
Uh-huh. I have not yet.
No.
I have not yet.
Huh.
I'm sitting on a lot of things that I could be doing, and I am not doing. Thank you. I'll tell you, I have heard in the last 2 days, I've heard from CBS that wants to do a story. I got a call from CBS, as a matter of fact, today. Strange Universe. Hard copy. Two other major networks that I can't mention. I have heard from more networks lately. I've heard from everybody but Peter Jennings. I haven't heard from ABC. Let me put it this way. I've heard from every major network save ABC. Some of them want to do something or another, and I have just not been, you know me, in television. I don't like TV. And these TV folks can't understand that. They just don't understand it. And I know how they feel. I mean, it is their medium and their baby. But I have always felt, I really have always felt, and I really still do, and you know, they really try to tempt you. I mean, we're talking money here. They try to tempt you into doing television. And I don't think it's a good idea. And, of course, I have been invited to a million of the UFO conferences, and I could be jetting all across the country all the time, and I haven't done that either. So I try to stay focused on what I'm doing here. And I have this feeling that if I go and try to do, you know, it's the Peter principle, that people will eventually rise to a level of incompetency or to a job for which they are not competent. And I like doing what I do here. And so I'm hesitant to go out and do other things. Maybe I'll someday get over that. I don't know. Or maybe not. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
KQMS, Southern California.
Well, hello there.
So if I go on vacation with you, do I get to follow you and Mona around?
Well, sure.
I really want to know, because if I don't, I'm not going.
Well, are you going?
If I don't get to follow you guys around and party with you guys, then I'm not going.
I see. Well, we are there to meet with people, so yes.
Because I want to watch you eat.
You want to watch me eat?
Yeah, I'm nosy.
Well, I do copious amounts of that on cruises. Everybody does.
I bet. I've seen those commercials.
It's actually, it's totally deadly. I mean, they feed you the best food.
Really?
The best food in the world all you want, any time of day or night, and there is no way to go on that cruise without coming back with more pounds.
No, seriously, I mean, you know, the pyramids are there for many lifetimes. We only have you for one lifetime.
Well, fortunately, it's this one.
Uh-huh. So, you know, the reason I have to know is because I'm saving up to go to that Farside Institute.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, and
that's... Going to become a remote viewer?
Uh-huh. I thought it was really cool. You know what I really like about it?
What?
It's like half the metaphysical type thing and half scientific. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a metaphysical discipline experience with a scientific discipline applied to it. And
I thought that made it really attractive to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think people go really overboard on that New Age thing sometimes. They're kind of out there.
Well, sometimes.
Listen,
you know, sometimes. But, you know, for example, the guest I had on last night.
He had excellent credentials.
Yeah, I really buy into that. I've not done it, but I felt the beginnings of it, and I have a feeling he's dead right.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I want to tell you something else. You know what? I used to smoke cigarettes, and I got this subliminal tape, and I haven't smoked cigarettes since May. And the catalog that I got it out of has this tape in there called Freedom from Allergies.
Right.
And it's supposed to use your subconscious to keep you from being allergy-free. I bet it would really work for Mona's asthma.
Sounds pretty touchy-feely to me.
It's not. In fact, I did, you know, I read, like, the messages, and, Dr. Jonathan Parker is one of the, they carry a lot of his stuff. But the messages that they give you are, they're very psychologically sound principles.
Yes.
And they really cover, like, all aspects of whatever habit that you're trying to conquer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting, and I think I'm going to send you a catalog.
All right, dear. I'll look forward to it. Thank you.
Bye.
I firmly believe, and that's why you see me into these topics, and that's why you see me treat them seriously, because I firmly believe that we are more than just our shell, our bodies. Our minds are capable of things that we have not yet begun to dream about. There are things out there, I'm going to begin to sound like Neil Armstrong, but there really are things out there that we have not begun to explore yet. And I think more and more people these days are waking up to that fact. And so you hear me do a lot of that sort of thing. My wife is in her second day of a pretty serious asthma attack. And so that's taken a lot out of me in the last day or so. She has asthma. The poor gal has had it since she was a child. And it's a pretty serious attack. Not as serious yet as the last one, but very serious. Disabling. I mean, to the point where you can only sit and concentrate on trying to breathe. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Morning, Art. How you doing?
Okay.
A couple of quick things. I was talking about the guy in Homestead about the coral.
Yes.
He was featured on Unsolved Mysteries. I'm not sure it was one of the old reruns.
Right.
And what they were talking about, he would be working, and people would come up and see him lifting things with his fingertips, and he'd stop whatever he was doing and talk to him and answer all the questions and stand there and wait for him to leave. And when they left, he'd go right back to doing his work.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, why would a man with an incredible secret like that take it to his grave?
I don't know. It was one of the strange things about him too. They said he would never ask anything direct, any answering direct questions about how he did things, but just would tell that he had the secret to how to build the pyramids, and maybe he just didn't want the secret to get out, and it was something that was too powerful for anybody else to understand.
Oh, that's really intriguing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something. And about Dan Aykroyd, I want to say, he was, about him, he's real serious about the UFOs and different things like that. When he made that interview with him when he was making my stepmother is an alien, and he was talking about he'd like to get interested in UFOs and different things like that. So I think he would take it pretty seriously.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah.
You know, if he's going to do something on it, I would hope he would take it a serious approach to it. Otherwise, he ought not do it.
Oh, this is Scott, by the way, from Tennessee, WTN.
All right, Scott.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Really enjoy your show.
Take care. There is an awakening going on across America. Two things that people used to laugh at or scoff at, and they're not laughing anymore, and they're not scoffing, and they're beginning to pay attention. And I'm frankly glad to see it. I began looking at this sort of thing many years ago in talk radio, and I did. I would do a number of shows. I would simply deviate every now and then because I got sick of talking about nothing but the news, or politics more specifically. And so I've done interviews in all of these areas, and we've had discussions for years about these kinds of things, and now all of a sudden I see the rest of the country beginning to come around. And it's a kind of an awakening, and it's a positive thing. I believe it is a very positive thing. There are still many who sit on the sidelines and chuckle away. Well, let them do so. There is more to life than that which is apparent from a material point of view. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Jim from Omaha.
Yes, sir.
On your Carl Castle.
Yes.
Remember the old series, In Search of Leonard Nimoy?
Sure.
They had a special on this, a 30-minute program on this.
Right.
And I copied the program. And this gentleman originally built this place, and he got mugged in this place. And he moved it 30 miles. And the interviews they did with the people that, truck driver, he rented a truck and had the driver go around the corner, come back in a few minutes, and got a load of these big rocks, and they moved them 30 miles.
Hmm.
And he wrote a book called Magnetic Current. Never was published. You know, never sold. But there is a television show on that Carl Castle. Mm-hmm. Shows some home films of him.
Well, he must have known something, again, to take it to the grave.
Yeah. Well, the people that he got the land from originally,
yes,
when he showed up, he told the owner, which was his only friend, that he discovered which they interviewed, the secret how they did the pyramids. They got the home film of him in his Carl Castle. And what happened to him, he put a suit on, went to town one day, checked himself into the hospital, and died in the hospital. He had tuberculosis.
Really?
Yeah. But if I ever get a copy of that, I'll send it to you.
I'll look forward to that. Thank you. In the meantime, there is somebody who's going to send photographs that he took, and we'll get those up on the web. That is amazing, isn't it? Can you imagine taking a secret like that to your grave? On the other hand, somebody said that the technology, or maybe that's the wrong word, the power that he had discovered was too significant to give to the world now. Maybe he had a point. I mean, we are not exactly the quintessential gentle civilization that one might hope we would be someday, eh? So we would probably use it to drop 4-ton blocks on our enemy.
Now we take you back to the night of September 26th, 1996, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Mark from Murfreesboro.
Hi, Mark.
Yes, I was wanting to ask Art Bell about the possibility of getting Jacques Vallée on the show.
Well, this...
And I was also wanting to ask him about...
Sir.
A possible...
Sir.
Yes.
Slow down.
Yes.
I am Art Bell.
Oh, Art.
Yes.
Yes, Jacques Vallée.
Send me his number.
Okay, I can do that. I can fax it to you.
All right.
Can you give me your fax number?
Area code 702-727-8499.
Okay. And one other thing I wanted to say about the Roswell, your Art's Park.
Yes.
It could be a government... the faction of the government that Dr. Boylan was talking about a couple weeks ago.
There's no question about it.
That they may be trying to throw you off. What do you call it? To hook you, you know.
Well, They've done a good job.
What?
They've done a good job. I'm hooked.
Yeah, but, I mean, it could not be. It's possible that it's not from, you know, some flying saucer from outer space.
Of course it's possible. But either way, sir, it's a big story because either they have created this or did create it sometime in the past in their work in trying to get a lifting body or a saucer or whatever you want to call it, our own government, or it's from elsewhere. Either way, it's a pretty big story, wouldn't you say?
Yes, sir, and I like your open-mindedness and your carefree attitude, you know, that you have to your show and everything.
It's an attitude about life, not just my show, sir. It just it is manifested in the program that I do. Thank you. I am pretty much open to anything. Why not? If you close your mind, then you're very likely going to miss something important eventually, aren't you? Now, an open mind will no doubt attract things that are without meaning on occasion. We see plenty of that here. But then also on occasion, you will stumble into things that, with a closed mind, would have passed you by in the night unnoticed. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Paul from Green Bay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how are you doing tonight?
Fine.
Yeah, I wanted to help you out with a couple of things you've been talking about for the past few days.
All right.
One was, have you ever heard of narcolepsy?
Yes.
And that's what they call the sleep paralysis.
No.
I had been told...
Narcolepsy, sir, is an illness where people are prone to falling asleep right in the middle of their daily activities, being at work, that kind of thing.
Right, but I was told, because I had the sleep paralysis for quite a long time, and I was told that it's like another form of narcolepsy. It's actually a mild form of epilepsy.
Well, now that may be. It's been called a grand or minor mal seizure.
Uh-huh.
So that could be.
And the guest that you had on seemed to, well, every time that I had the episodes, there's always been a demon or something dark that was poking at me or trying to get at me. So I was very skeptical about some of the explanations that he gave.
Well, an awful lot of people, sir, came on and verified exactly what it was that he said. If you listen carefully, an awful lot of people came on and verified, and I've had, I don't know, a million faxes and emails, people that have experienced it, people who said, thank you, you know, I thought I was the only one, that kind of thing. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, turn your radio off.
Getting there.
Off.
Okay.
That's good. Where are you?
I'm in Boise, Idaho.
Yes, sir.
My name's Bill. You had that strange automated telephone thing. Did you figure out what that was?
Well, I'm working on the idea of an alarm system right now, but
okay.
No, it's not settled yet.
No problem. Well, I heard the sound yesterday, and if it's the same one, you can find out. Unfortunately, I don't have the telephone number here for the Imperial Under Calls to give it to you. U.S. Naval Observatory has a time telephone number to call.
Right.
And it gives you, I think, two pitches and a tone.
Right.
And it's not looking for anything back, but it just blurts that real quick, takes about 7 seconds.
Well, this thing was looking for an answer of some kind. And
I was listening to it on your web page, and it sounds the same.
I'm sorry?
I was listening to it on the web page that you have? On the internet?
Listening to what?
Oh, the sound. It was digitized.
No, they've got it up there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be damned. I didn't know that.
They're quick.
I know. Listen, Keith is so fast. He gets stuff up there sometimes before I even ask, and this is another case of that.
But check it out. Last I knew, there wasn't a 1-800 number for it, but when I dial it from my computer at work to set the time on the machine, if I leave the modem on,
uh-huh.
It sounds like that.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. My modem does not sound like that. No modem sounds like. He mentioned some materials that sounded very, very much like the alleged skin of the spacecraft that we have, blackened on one side, a charcoal, kind of, not plastic, of course, but a layered material, and that's why I asked him whether any of the material appeared to be layered, and he had not examined it that closely. So it was it is a very fine layering indeed, as you know, of bismuth and magnesium. And so I went that far. Arthouse Comet, there's a little picture of my cat. Comet is doing, by the day, leaps and bounds better. Whatever became of that rumor that Chuck Harder had been abducted by a black helicopter? Is there any truth to it? Love the show. Board op at WGL, Jeff, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I can only tell you, Jeff, that I, too, have heard that rumor. Doesn't mean it's true. Doesn't mean it's not. Good morning, Art. Jesse Marcel Jr. was an interesting person. With regard to the factualness of his report, it was obvious, as you pointed out, that he was not embellishing the account at all. There are two things that bear further investigation. If I were him, his father's effects that are in storage, yes, of course. I'd have gone through those with a fine-tooth comb. Secondly, I'd make every attempt to try and decipher those symbols on the beam. Of course, the only way that could be done, if at all, would be through regressive hypnosis, and he does not seem amenable to that. So here we are with a mystery. Exactly correct. We are left with, as is always the case, it seems, a mystery. So it's open lines. I can tell you this. We have unusual conditions going on. Shortwave is extremely depressed at the moment by magnetic storms that are going on. We had a full moon eclipse earlier in the evening, a red moon. I went out and saw it. It was incredible. And there's a lot of radiation washing over Mother Earth at the moment. So it'll be an interesting night, and I suspect people will be affected by it, as they always are by a full moon, and perhaps more so with a magnetic storm underway. So who knows?
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name. Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today.
Now we take you back to the night of September 26th, 1996, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Okay.
The thing about the Coral Castle, I have a 10 assorted snapshot prints here. And I'd like to send them to you if I could get your address.
I would love it. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's Art Bell, Post Office Box 4755.
Yes.
In Pahrump. Don't laugh at that person. Pahrump.
Okay.
Nevada. Zip code 89041-4755.
Okay, also, he had made that castle for his sweetheart.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And after he died, they contacted her to see if she'd like to see it, and she didn't want anything to do with it.
Really?
Yes, I thought that was very sad.
It's gratitude for you.
Right, but there's like 10 different snapshots. There's a panorama, a map of Florida, moon fountain, 9-ton gate, Polaris telescope, heart-shaped table, giant obelisk, Mars, Saturn, and crescent, bedroom and bath, and sundial. And it was very strange because he lived, you know, the sundial, they said that that's the way he lived. He was like from the dark ages or something.
Well, there are a lot of things we don't understand.
Right. But it's a beautiful place, and I will send you these snapshots.
I'll look forward to it.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll take the best of what I get and get it up on the web. You know what else? I've got some really incredible shots of the pyramids. Boy, you know, that brings to mind again the, I want to tell you about the cruise. And I'm not going to go all through it. I'm just going to tell you that we're going to Athens, Greece, Cairo, Egypt. We're going to Giza, the pyramids, the Sphinx. Going to Israel, Jerusalem, Haifa. We're going to the Greek Isles, and they are absolutely spectacular. Going to Naples, Italy, Pompeii. Boy, do I want to see Pompeii. The Isle of Capri. We're going to Rome, Italy. It's all on the Mazdam. It's a cruise. It's luxury. It's the best ship I've ever been on. It's the same one we were on this last trip, except this time we're going to some places that I really, really, really want to go to. It is a year from October 1st. You've got plenty of time, but you don't. You don't have plenty of time. In other words, as always, we book this far ahead of time, and as always, it books very, very quickly, and we quickly reach a state where it is sold out. Boy, am I looking forward to this. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Ed in Sunland, California.
How you doing, Ed?
Okay. A couple of very diverse questions. Jackie Gleason, the late comedian.
Yes.
He was very interested in UFOs, and I wonder if you ever heard the story that he actually saw the bodies of ETs.
There is that rumor floating around.
Yeah, he was a friend of President Nixon, and he asked Nixon to see the bodies, and I just heard vaguely a little bit about it, and I wonder,
No, I cannot confirm it. I heard the same rumor. But
yeah, well, that's something. But, and also, I'm interested in Nikola Tesla. And there was a city in Northern California named after Tesla, and I can't find too much information about it, and I wonder if anybody out there might...
I suppose that would be Tesla, California, right?
Yes, that's it. It was near Livermore, California.
Uh-huh.
That's all I know about, and it was in the 1890s, and...
And I suppose the entire city runs on free power, right?
Well, I think the city disappeared. So I found a little bit about it, but it's
city. Excuse me, disappeared.
Disappeared. Uh-huh. It was a coal mining area, and then became a ghost town. Now
I think it's just a
cow pasture.
I see. All right. Thank you very much for the call. The city named after Tesla. I thought he meant actually physically. Disappear. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Mark in KEX / Como country.
I'm
headed up there. Say, when you go to Israel, you ought to go to the Tomb of the Patriarch. It's in, what town is that in? It's in Hebron.
Okay.
Supposedly, underneath it is the tomb of Abraham and Isaac and stuff.
Yes.
The last person to go down there was a 12-year-old girl that Moshe Dayan sent down because the opening is so small.
Yes.
And she said that she saw bones and like a, what would you call it, a pier that like the body lays on.
Yes.
And I think that'd be an interesting thing since you're, going into strange little areas like under the sinks and stuff.
Yeah, but I'm not 12 and I'm not little.
Well, that's true, that is an interesting place, and it's...
Now, my wife is fairly small. Maybe she'd crawl down there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, your son is bigger than you. I saw the picture of him.
Yeah, he's gigantic.
Yeah, he is. But anyway, apparently there hasn't been, like, an adult down there, I guess about 30 years before the Six-Day War or whatever it was, some British people, like, bribed the guard there, and actually went down in there, and the caliph of that town at the time found out about it and, like, concreted over the opening. He used to be able to go down there. But there are stories, like, people have seen, Abraham's wife's ghost down there and things like that. Pretty strange.
I'll check it out. Thank you. There, the rest of the world, and Americans don't necessarily realize this until you do some traveling, but in most parts of the world, bribery is the norm. And when you want to get something and get somewhere and get something done, you bribe. I mean, that's all there is to it. In most of the rest of the world, South America, Asia, especially in Asia, and certainly in Eastern Europe, that is absolutely true. Russia, China, most of the rest of the world operates on bribe. I know it's a horrible thing to have to contemplate, but it really is quite true. You can bribe your way into about anything. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
Art?
Yes.
I was calling to tell you about Dan Aykroyd.
Yes.
I saw him on Rosie O'Donnell's talk show.
Yes.
He was talking about that show, and he's very serious about it. He's been working with several scientific groups, and they have, don't quote me on this, but I believe what he said they were going to do or going to reenact some actual stories that they've investigated and found to be trustworthy. And this group that he's been working with has disproved several false things that people have been reporting. And they hunt down true stories, investigate them, and then on the show, they are supposedly going to reenact them.
I am suspicious of that.
Yeah, they're going to do it sort of like the X-Files, he said.
Yeah, I see. All right, well, thank you. I am suspicious of that, reenactments. I could envision, for example, a reenactment of the Roswell mystery, but why would that necessarily be any more accurate or reliable than anybody else's? Example, the interview we did in the first hour tonight, I think, is as close to hearing what really happened as you're going to hear. That was Jesse Marcel Jr., and he told us what he really saw and what he didn't see. And unfortunately, when you do reenactments and you're doing something for dramatic value, you know, as in a television show, you're under pressure to make it interesting. And I'm sorry, and I have no reflection on Dan Aykroyd, and I'm sure that it will come out just fine, but there's pressure to make it look better than it was. And if even the movie Roswell, which even Jesse Marcel said was fairly faithful, found it necessary to put twists in the story, the unfolding foil, which Jesse never saw, the piece which Jesse supposedly took or kept, which in real life he did not. And it's a little difficult to separate myth from reality, and when you're doing things in reenactments, it's I think too tempting for people in the TV industry to include things that ought not be. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, yeah. About the Chupacabra?
Yes.
Did you hear anything about a study that was done by some scientists in Central America where they looked at some of the victims of the so-called Chupacabra, and they found that, like, the bite marks and the nature of the attacks matched like the attacks typical of wild dogs and things like that. And kind of
well, of course I've heard that. How does that account, though, for the hundreds or even thousands of animals that have been found with the bite marks on their neck and all the blood drained? Dogs don't drain blood.
Well, I mean, blood's a really good source of protein. I mean,
yes, but even
certainly
yes,
a dog will...
But you're missing the point, sir. With just two bite marks on the neck, there is no dog I know of that can drain all the blood from an animal.
Well, I mean, I think you get a lot of hysteria, like, you know, and, you know, someone talks about a goat sucker, and then suddenly every attack is associated with the Chupacabra. And,
oh, sure.
You know.
It's like UFOs. Not everything people see in the sky is an alien spaceship.
Yeah, I mean, Jackie right? Gleason, you know, seeing extraterrestrials, what's up with that? I just think it's funny how people are so quick to sort of jump to all these conclusions, you know, like this new species of a goat sucker. I mean, like a new animal is going to suddenly appear or something.
Why not?
Well, I mean, I just think it's really incredulous.
Well, let's think about this a little bit. There's a lot of incredulous stuff, sir, that goes on, but is nevertheless true, like the coral castle that we've been hearing about this morning. Now,
well, didn't he use a block and tackle or something, though? I mean...
There was some sort of block and tackle there, not capable of moving blocks that size.
Yeah.
So maybe you'd like to answer for us how it was done.
I can't answer it, but
right.
I mean, I'm sure there's an explanation. I'm just not really quick to believe, like, you know, all this sort of.
Well,
I don't know. I don't listen to the.
Do you believe that animals become as species become extinct?
Yeah.
You do believe that?
Yeah.
Is it unreasonable to believe that new species appear?
No. I mean, I think, yeah, that happens for sure, but not by such a big leap as, you know, something that sucks blood, you know, feeds in a completely different manner than...
Well, you said it yourself. Blood is protein.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. A lot of things, you know...
I think bats drink blood, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is not unreasonable to believe that there would be a creature that would sustain itself with the protein in blood.
Well, yeah, that's true, and a lot do. But why would it suddenly appear now? You know, I mean,
why are species becoming extinct now?
Well, because man is taking away his habitat or animals' habitat.
That's a very small cause. It is indeed a cause. Or maybe it's a big cause. I don't know. But there are species that become extinct without the help or the hindrance of man.
Yeah, that's true also. I mean, it's a natural process also, you know.
So that there could be a new creature. I mean, it's like asking, why are there new diseases?
Yeah, I mean, you have a good point. But I think, you know, for a new sort of, a new animal that's so different from anything that's previously been described that flies and jumps around like a little, you know,
mm-hmm.
some sort of vampire dinosaur. I mean, the descriptions are so weird from a few things I've read. It just, I don't know. And, you know, how is it suddenly, you know, how does it radiate so fast? It's seen in Mexico and then suddenly it's in, you know, New England or something. I don't know.
Those are questions I don't have answers for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
I haven't heard about New England. Where has it been seen there?
Well, I thought I heard in Massachusetts or something. There was
really? I mean, here you go now, spreading new information. I haven't heard it was in New England.
There's an article in Outside Magazine, I think.
Right, here we go. All right, sir, thank you. All right, so the chupacabra now seen in New England. Tisk. Tisk, sir, spreading rumors like that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, sir. I'm calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
This is the first time I've called. I've only heard you twice, and I must say I'm very impressed.
Well, thank you.
Two questions. Number one, my grandmother lives in Sumner County, Tennessee.
Right.
And for years and years, we've seen helicopters go by without any markings.
Black helicopters.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess they're black.
And have you, there is one important thing I must ask you.
Okay.
Have you seen Chuck Harder?
Have I seen what?
I guess it doesn't matter. Chuck Harder.
No, I haven't.
No, you haven't. All right. I mean, hanging out or waving or screaming for help or something.
Okay.
Anyway, so helicopters.
Right. And number two, and I'll hang up and listen to you. I was told to ask what the arts part are. He said it would be very interesting.
Well, it is very interesting, and that's a very difficult question, but I'll try and answer it in a nutshell. Arts parts were sent anonymously from Charleston, South Carolina, by a man who claims his father was on the retrieval team at Roswell, New Mexico, and he claims these parts are from a crashed extraterrestrial vehicle of some kind. We received them better than a half year ago, and we have been testing them all over the country, in labs all over the country. We have a lot of anomalous results. As a matter of fact, right now, we have got a video that you can get just by going up to my website. It will run on any 486 computer with a math code processor. You can download it. It's like, I want to tell you more, but I know better. It would be a disservice right now to a number of individuals were I to open my mouth. And I'm dying to say what I want to say, but I guess 24 hours, we can wait 24 hours.
Go Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast Insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Now we take you back to the night of September 26th, 1996, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Well, I hope you're going to come along on this next cruise. You know how cool cruises are? Instead of, going to this many places, you would normally have to get on an airplane and pack and unpack and pack and unpack and go into hotels, and it's horrible, horrible. Even though you're seeing exotic locations and having a blast, this packing, unpacking business is horrible. With a cruise, you have your own room, cabin, and it's home. And so the ship docks, and you take the minimum amount of stuff you want to have a good time that day, and you go ashore, and you have fun. You have great fun. And then you come home, and all your things are in the cabin. So if you have never been on a cruise, I urge you to consider this next one that we're going on. It's going to be incredible, really incredible, and it's an easy way to go as compared to the alternative. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Russell.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a couple of comments here. First, over there in Israel, there's no hope for peace unless Israel's either wiped off the face of the map or Palestine has their own state. And I don't see that happening.
No, that's not going to happen. And the Palestinians and the Syrians and others, more quietly, are going to continue to want Israel to disappear from the face of the earth, and eventually it's going to come down to blows.
And I kind of see that as also what's going on in Bosnia, you know, as soon as we leave. As soon as we leave, it's an all-out massacre, you know. Yeah, or just...
I know. And probably President Clinton is going to get a Nobel Peace Prize for what he has done. And my question at this point would be, when all hell breaks loose, can they take it back?
Yeah, exactly. And same with, let's look at Haiti and Northern Ireland. I mean, this Clinton is just an amazing thing. It's just imagery. You know, it seems like that's all this guy's interested in, is delaying the inevitable.
Well,
with a bunch of smoke and mirrors. There's no substance to any of his policies.
Yes, there is. I don't fault him for trying in Bosnia. I would fault him for not trying. And any president would have had to have tried. I mean, we have some responsibility, I know that, to go in there and try to prevent a Holocaust, try to prevent genocide.
Well, I mean...
How far we go to do that, I don't know. But I don't fault him for trying. It's just that I understand, as you do, that the minute we leave, they're going to go back to doing what they do, and that's killing each other.
Yeah, but I still say we would have just armed both sides and let them go at it. But, you know, the Muslims have their worldview, and the Protestants, European, Christian, whatever, you know, they have their worldview, and they've always clashed. This goes back to the Dark Ages, you know, the knights and all the round table and all that. It's always been the same story. I mean, let's face it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there's never going to be peace until Jesus Christ is sitting on a throne ruling his kingdom. And until then, we're just, you know, everybody's got to keep themselves armed to the teeth.
Well, I'm with you there. Thank you very much. You defend yourself. I really don't fault Clinton for trying in Bosnia. I don't think he had any choice. I really don't think he had any choice. But I don't think it's going to work. And I do think if we leave, unless there's an international presence there for the next 40 years or so, which there may be, the minute the force leaves, the war will resume and the genocide will resume. It's a pretty safe bet. What's going on now in Israel It's a little difficult to understand how that will be resolved without it becoming an all-out war. It may. I'm very interested. I want to see Israel. I want to see Egypt. I want to see these areas. I mean, there's a little bit of danger, but every trip I've had has had a little bit of danger. So what? You go into communist China, there's a little bit of danger. You go into Russia these days, there is a fair amount of danger. You go to Israel, there's danger. You go into areas where there's terrorism, there is danger. But I like living life, and these are things I want to see, and I'm not going to be stopped because there's a little bit of danger. So I think this coming trip, you have no idea how I'm looking forward to it. I have wanted to see all my life the pyramids. And with the programs I've been doing, and the ones that are coming, the one coming up, as a matter of fact, later tonight, boy, is that going to be a program. Don't miss that. Graham Hancock, Robert Bilal, and maybe more. There are developments that will occur during the day today that will dictate what's going to occur tonight, and I can't tell you I know what's going to happen. I can tell you there are dramatic, powerful things afoot, and tonight you'll learn about it. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
This is Corky in Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
We had a UFO sighting here back before you went on vacation, and you called for information on it. Don't know if anybody ever responded, but I have some.
All right. What can you tell me?
I'm capsulizing from a newspaper article in the Portland, Tennessee Leader.
Okay.
This family lives pretty much out in the country, and this incident started about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
The father was awakened by a sound which... it sounded like animals scurrying around the roof. And he got up, went, looked out, saw nothing, went back to bed. And about 4:30 a.m., he heard it again and went and looked. And he described an entity, which the newspaper does not describe, that was standing on his deck looking back at him. And there was a small white light about the size of a baseball floating around his yard about 4 feet off the ground, and it seemed to be chasing this entity. He also noticed, looking out through his backyard, he said about 2 miles away and perhaps 500 feet off the ground, there was a larger white-yellow light, which at one time was emitting red rays.
Did he describe the entity?
If he did, the newspaper did not pick up on it. They left a description of the entity out of the paper.
Dumb reporters.
But this thing left scratch marks on his deck, and they published a picture, which is not very clear. This light chased the entity under his cars in the driveway, and he noticed that the antennas on the cars were vibrating back and forth. A neighbor saw this light, so he had a witness. So he woke up his wife and children, and they got up, and they viewed all of this, and it went on until daylight began to dawn. And they went back to bed. Later they got up, and the husband, about 9 a.m., thought, you know, everything was cool, everything was over. So he took off to the hardware store, and after he left the house, it started all over again. And the wife, she went and pulled back the curtains in the den, and this thing, this entity, was standing on the deck.
Oh, man.
Looking back at her. Subsequently, they called the State Highway Patrol and the local police. They all investigated, and a local national TV station, CBS affiliate, went up and did a story. Incidentally, they treated it seriously. They did not use it.
I understand.
And the fellow has said since that if he had known what he knows now, he would never have allowed the media on his property. He's... of course, being called a kook at work and going through the usual aftermath that people seem to go through. But he had two large dogs, which slept right in the yard through the whole thing.
Really?
And later... They noticed in the morning the dogs were unresponsive to light. And he said they seemed to be heavily sedated.
Oh.
And they took the dogs to the vet, and one of them had a cut about an inch and a half on his back leg.
Wow.
But that's pretty much what the newspaper had to say.
Well, the only complaint I've got is that how could they possibly go out there and not ask for a description of the, quote, entity?
I agree. Like I say, this is a small town, a very small town newspaper, and I think maybe somebody must have been sympathetic to this fellow and just overlooked that part.
I see. I see. Well, I really appreciate that. Yes, I remember the report, and I was having a hard time getting any information on it that night, but that is fascinating. And
well, a MUFON representative has been there. He was there the next day.
If anybody out there has got a copy of the original newspaper article, I'd love to have it.
I'll send it to you. This fell into my hands. My sister rounded it up for me. She lives very near where this happened, and she picked up an old copy of the newspaper.
I suppose by now the fellow, poor fellow, is probably not pleased with the press and probably wouldn't want to talk to me, huh?
He is not named in this article. You might have to call the newspaper to track that down. But
if anybody can help out there, it sure would make a cool interview.
Well, I will. I'll copy this and send it to you, and I'll make a couple of phone calls and alert the paper that you might call them.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And I would love to interview that man. That sounds like he's really been put through it. Perhaps he would like an opportunity to tell his story without scorn, and I would certainly provide that. Something definitely happened there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Art, good
yes.
morning.
Good morning to you.
Couple of things. Number one, the fellow that killed the little girl, I think he should they shouldn't put him to death right away. I think they should make him suffer for a while.
Well, if waiting 10 years constitutes suffering, that's about the period of time it'll take for the appeals process.
You're probably right. The other thing is, I have a big dish, and I was doing some surfing yesterday, and you know how they'll show shows early on network feeds.
Yeah,
and
wild feeds they're called.
Right, and there was a show that I watched yesterday afternoon that was kind of interesting, and I wish I could remember the fellow's name that they were doing the show on. An English fellow that is studying, you know, like the underground, caverns and stuff, or the, you know, all the tunnels and stuff underneath the pyramids.
Yes.
And different things like that. Of course, he goes to South America.
Was not Graham Hancock, was it?
No, it was another.
Okay.
Another name I hadn't heard of before. But the fellow that's doing the show, do you know the name of the guy that is, because I don't know, I'm a blind person, so I couldn't read the credits. Do you know the fellow that is the guy that plays Al on Home Improvement? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't watch it, but I know who you're talking about.
Okay, this guy sounded like him, you know, so that's why I'm thinking it was he that was the moderator of the show.
I see.
And it sounds like it's something that's going to be coming up on ABC.
I'll look for it.
It was very, very interesting. I just caught the last, you know, like half hour of it.
Sure.
But it was very interesting.
All right.
I thought,
well,
this is down your alley.
I'll keep my eye open.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
And good morning to you, sir. Thank you for the tip. There are so many things these days. So much television. So many channels. So little time. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art. Tim in Denver. Hi. Country.
Hi, Tim.
We've been getting the snow most of the night.
Really?
Yeah, about 4 inches out there. It's not sticking to the streets, but the grass looks pretty packed down.
Mm.
So, anyway, I've got a quick question.
Maybe it'll improve Elway's game.
Was that a slam?
Possibly, yeah.
You're evil. You're terrible. quick question. If a major event was to occur, very newsworthy proportions, would you rather it be shortly before you went on the air, when you were on the air, or after you've gotten off the air and had most of the day to listen to it and form opinions about the event?
The answer is it depends on the event.
It would depend.
There are some times when events occur when I'm on the air,
mm-hmm.
that it's very exciting. The audience participates. I immediately get into it because we do live talk radio overnight, and we have reports here probably better than about anywhere else because we have all these people gathering information. Other kinds of things are horrible because you don't have information about them. You can't get information about them. And the minute it occurs, everybody runs away to television to try and figure out what's going on. And, of course, they're sitting there repeating usually senseless information over and over and over again because they don't know what's going on.
Right.
And so it depends on the event. Many times I would prefer an event to occur and for me to be able to digest and form my own opinion so we can come and talk about it intelligently on the air. So I don't know. That's no kind of answer, but...
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Quick story I'd like to relate to you. I loaned a copy of your book to my brother, whose boss started listening.
Oh.
And when you returned the book to my brother, he said, I asked how he liked it, and he said, I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of information that I didn't know. And I said, yeah, there is. And he said, for example, I didn't know Art was a ham. And I said, oh, yeah, the more you listen to him, he's a real cut-up. He is a ham. And he started laughing. He says, no, I meant ham radio.
Absolutely. Buried in ham radio all my life. And Busman's Holiday. Thank you very much for the call. I'm radio here. Radio really has been my life. You know, you hear people say that kind of thing, but it really has been. Since I was old enough to begin taking my mom's appliances apart, I took a lot of appliances apart. I got in a lot of trouble about that. Since that moment, and that was shortly after I could walk, I have been fascinated by electronics, by radio, and my whole life has been devoted to that. And when I'm not doing it here, then I'm doing it elsewhere. For example, when I get off here in a few minutes, you know, the show's about to come to an end, I have an antenna to fix. I have an N connector to put on some coax, and I hate N connectors. Hams will know what I'm talking about. They're horrible. So one way or the other, I'm consistently involved in radio up to my neck. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
I tried to call you yesterday. Well, actually, I called my wife and woke her up and had her try to call you. She doesn't actually have the sleep paralysis, but she has a similar experience. And while she's fully awake, she, I guess, just has the out-of-body type thing where she can see herself leaving and she can go places.
You know, I was thinking yesterday when we were talking about this sort of thing, you know a bad place to have an OBE?
Where's that?
While you're driving.
Well, she did it at work. She does hair and...
Well, sometimes at work it might be all right.
Yeah, I imagine if you're doing old lady's hair and...
You said she does hair?
Yeah.
Oh, now see...
She's a cosmetologist.
I understand. Now there's one person you don't want to have an OBE is your barber.
No.
No.
But she tried to call you. I called her and woke her up. She's not usually up this time of the morning, but...
I bet she appreciated that.
Oh, yes, she did.
She did?
She really